This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul in صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says Israel must join the Chemical Weapons Convention without delay or any preconditions. Tension mounting in Kazakhstan. Gunshots reported in Almaty as troops clash with people protesting against the government for a fifth day. Also the headlines, the US restarts a Trump-era policy requiring migrants to wait for court hearings in Mexico. World News, we're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour, Iran says the United States and Israel are obstructing the complete elimination of chemical weapons in the world. Addressing a UN Security Council session, Iran's deputy permanent representative to the UN expressed deep concern about the US non-compliance with the Chemical Weapons Convention. Zahra Irshadi stressed that the U.S. is the only member state of the convention which still possesses chemical weapons. She added that Israel must be forced to join the Arms Control Treaty immediately and without any preconditions. The convention bans the use, production and stockpiling of chemical arms. The Iranian envoy further highlighted Syria's commitment to destroy its chemical stockpile. She said the UN Security Council's monthly sessions over Syria have no justification when the convention's implementing body has approved the elimination of Syrian weapons. Political commentator Jason Nrue says the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons is refusing to investigate the United States or Israel's chemical arms programs because it's fearing punishment.
I think that very clearly the reason the OPCW does not investigate Israel or the United States is, frankly, because if you try to investigate them, the United States would punish them for doing so. We do recall when the International Human Rights Court wanted to investigate the way the United States treats its prisoners, they slap sanctions on individuals who may serve as the judge. We've had Israel threaten them on more than one occasion that they would retaliate if they investigated them for the constant crimes against humanity that they actually commit. So it's very clear that this double standard exists. The reason the OPCW does not carry out these investigations is simply because the one with the largest guns will not let them.
Iran's top negotiator in the Vienna talks describes as positive the ongoing negotiations between Tehran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 deal. Ali Barghari-Khani says the participants are working to get the ultimate results. He says an agreement to effectively remove anti-Iran sanctions can guarantee the success of the talks. He noted that an agreement could be reached faster if the other sides are ready to accept Iran's proposed mechanism for verifiable removal of sanctions and guarantees that the US will not abandon the deal again. Iran and the remaining signatories, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, are engaged in their eighth round of talks in the Austrian capital. The US unilaterally withdrew from the deal in 2018 and is not directly involved in the talks. We've reached out to political analyst Sayed Mohammed Marandi for his take on the latest round of Vienna talks. He says the only thing that needs to be done at this stage to achieve a success is for the US to return to compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal.
During the current negotiations, as we speak, it's the United States that has left the table. The United States left the nuclear deal. The Iranians are saying if the United States wants to re-engage, if they wanted the P5 plus 1, which became the P4 plus 1, to become the P5 plus 1 again, then they have to implement the deal. It's not very complicated. The Americans and the Europeans are dragging their feet. But it's quite simple. This has already been negotiated 6 years ago. With regards to the JCPOA, the Iranians negotiated extensively with the United States to reach the deal. And what happened immediately after the deal? Obama began violating the deal behind the scenes. He told the Treasury to threaten banks not to cooperate with Iran in violation of the deal. And then Trump tore up the deal. So every time Iran engaged with the United States, it was stabbed in the back. The Iranian position is clear. The Iranians expect a full implementation of the JCPOA. They expect a strong mechanism for verification, because last time around in 2015, that was one of the major flaws of the nuclear deal. The Iranian side, the Iranian commitments were all quickly verified by the International Atomic Energy Agency, but there was no verification mechanism for the Americans and the Europeans, and they took advantage of that. As I said earlier, the Americans violated the deal from day one by imposing new sanctions, but also by dragging their feet with regards to implementation. This time around, the Iranians are saying the verification process and the assurances have to be clear.
Happening at this hour, a funeral procession is underway in Tehran for 150 martyrs of the Iran-Iraq war that took place decades ago. The mourning procession is part of a larger national event, as similar memorial events are underway for 100 more martyrs in 24 provinces across the country. The Iran-Iraq war took place over 8 years during the 1980s. A former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein launched a military invasion of Iran while being heavily supported by Western and regional states. Hundreds of thousands of Iranians are estimated to have either lost their lives or gone missing during the war. Over the years, the country has been carrying out search operations to recover the remains of those missing. Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf, addressing the crowd of mourners who, as I noted, are commemorating at this particular event 150 martyrs yet to be identified following the Iraq-imposed war on Iran in the 1980s. These events the commemorations are ongoing across the country. 250 in total bodies have been recovered and returned back to the homeland, Iran. Up to 160,000 are estimated to have been martyred during the war itself, or hundreds of thousands, I should say, hundreds of thousands of Iranians are estimated to have been martyred during the war, and they have about 60,000 others that went missing in action. There have been many events since the end of the war that similar commemorations when bodies come back or are found and identified. Similar processions take place over the past decades. Today's event is even more emotional as it coincides with the martyrdom anniversary of the Prophet's granddaughter following the invasion of the forces of the former Iraqi regime led by Saddam Hussein. Iran defended its territory despite the massive support that the former Iraqi regime received from the international community as well as regional states. If I'm not mistaken, this particular event is for the bodies that have been recovered for this particular event were martyred during operations Karbala 4 and Karbala 5 when Iran was defending its territory during the 8 years of what is known in the Islamic Republic as sacred defense. It was the former Iraqi regime that invaded Iran, invaded a neighbor with the support of many Western countries as well as regional. We'll bring you more on that as we will be covering those events during the day. Now, Palestinian prisoner Hisham Abu Hawash is suspending his hunger strike after 140 days following an agreement by Israel to release him. His hunger strike, which is one of the longest ever, brings to the fore the years-long challenges of many Palestinians that are held captive in Israeli jails for undisclosed allegations.
Hisham Abu Hawash has been refusing to eat for 141 days, but is finally breaking this fast because the Israeli regime has agreed to release him next month. Abu Hawash has been receiving a great deal of support from the Palestinian people, who have rallied, protesting his unjust detention and demanding his freedom. And now these people finally have a reason to celebrate. In Al-Khalil, Abu Hawash's home, his supporters have turned out to rejoice this victory against Israeli jailers. His family had an especially tough time in recent days after doctors warned that Abu Hawash's health was deteriorating, that he was slipping in and out of coma and facing the danger of sudden death. Now they can finally breathe a sigh of relief. Now Abu Hawash's lawyer says he would be hospitalized for medical follow-up before his designated release on February 26. Palestinian officials have weighed in, praising his resistance.
Hisham Abu Hawash prevails after 141 days of hunger strike. We hail Hisham for his forceful will, his family, Palestinian people and people around the world who raise their voices in solidarity, thanks to countries that press Israel to release him next month on February 26.
Resistance movements have also poured praise on Abu Hawash, saying his victory should remind Palestinians how they can win every battle against Israel. The 40-year-old father of five children was arrested in October 2020 and started his hunger strike early 5 months ago to protest his detention without charge or trial that is allowed under Israel's administrative detention system. His lengthy hunger strike once again shed light on this illegal practice. Out of 7,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, more than 500 are locked up without facing any charges or having a trial. For many of them, the last choice against this inhumane measure is to stop eating for lengthy periods of time. Still, the majority find themselves locked up in deplorable and non-standard conditions of the Israeli prisons, where they are sometimes even subjected to systematic torture and harassment.
Turning to some developing news out of Kazakhstan, widespread unrest against soaring energy prices enters its fifth day, with local witnesses reporting clashes between protesters and troops in the largest city, Almaty. Reports are coming in of gunshots at Almaty's main square, where protesters are gathering and security personnel are deployed. The whole country is now under a state of emergency, and the internet is mostly down. At least 8 officers have been killed and more than 300 injured in nationwide protests over the past days. The turmoil prompted the resignation of the Prime Minister on Wednesday, President Qasem Jomart Tokayev is appealing to a Russian-led alliance of ex-Soviet states for assistance against what he calls terrorists. This is the worst unrest taking place in Kazakhstan in over a decade. And political commentator Tony Gosling says the unrest in Kazakhstan is apparently being orchestrated from abroad.
There's two competing narratives here, and I think I'll leave it to your listeners to decide which is the truest, really. One is that the outside powers very much want to get their hands on this incredibly resource-rich country. Well, oil is just one of the resources, gold and rare minerals. Now, we all know how much these new electric car-powered industries and solar industries are desperate for the sorts of minerals that are in Kazakhstan. So it could be that this is something which has been orchestrated from outside. Now, I would say, you might say, well, you know, that this is the sort of thing that is unlikely to be because it's a spontaneous thing from the people of Kazakhstan, and it may well be, particularly since the government has been upping all these energy prices. This, of course, is going to upset people, and it's one of the reasons that governments should not allow this sort of thing to happen, because what they're doing is they're providing an excuse for people to come out on the streets. But if you look at over the years about how revolutions have happened in countries, how governments have been overthrown and overturned, well, we can go back to Russia between 1917 and 1923, and China between 1946 and 49. These were very long, drawn-out, slow processes.
Now, turning to other news, the United States begins returning Central American migrants held up at its border with Mexico. In a restart of a policy adopted by former President Donald Trump, the UN's International Organization of Migration says more than 200 people have so far been returned. This is while President Joe Biden had pledged to pursue what he called a more humane approach to immigration. But a U.S. federal judge ruled that Biden's move did not follow proper procedure. It's also ruled that a controversial scheme known as Migrant Protection Protocols be reinstated. The program forces asylum seekers to wait for U.S. court hearings in Mexico. The UN Refugee Agency is warning that asylum seekers may face numerous risks like kidnapping and rape. Some 7,000 refugees are seeking asylum in the U.S.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
On Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Fatima, peace upon her, faith personified. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, dear listeners, and condolences to you all on a very tragic day. Today is the third of the month of Jamadi Thani, the day the most noblest lady of all times achieved martyrdom 95 days after the departure of her illustrious father from the mortal world. So profound was her grief in the brief period that she lived after her father because of the calamities she had suffered at the hands of those who had usurped her inheritance, deprived her husband of his right of political leadership of the Ummah, and smashed the door of her house upon her, that she would lament at the graveside of her father with the following words: O father, the grief that befell me after you is of such magnitude that it would have turned bright days into dark nights. She was none other than Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the immaculate daughter of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Before we present you a special feature on this tragic anniversary, here is a famous statement from the Prophet. Surely my daughter Fatima is the leader of all women from the beginning to the end. She is part of me and the light of my eyes. She is the flower of my heart and is my soul. She is a human huri who, whenever she stands in prayers in the presence of her Lord, exalted is his name, her light illuminates the skies for the angels like a star's shine to people on earth. This is how the Prophet of Islam described to his companions his only surviving offspring, who was, alas, not destined to live more than 3 months or 95 days after his departure from the mortal world. As a matter of fact, the life of the noblest ever lady that graced planet Earth, who was the pride of the Virgin Mary, peace upon her, and whose pristine purity, radiance of faith, devotion to divine commandments, perpetually abundant munificence, and other exemplary characteristics, God Almighty Himself has enshrined in the Noble Quran, such as Ayah 33 of Surah Ahzab, Ayah 61 of Surah Al-Imran, etc., was cut short in the prime of youth by the afflictions to which she was subjected at the hands of a deviated group of the Prophet's companions. No sooner did her father pass away. It would be repetitive to say that her house was stormed with fire and crowbars by these persons who flung the door in her face and pinned her to the wall, resulting in miscarriage of the stillborn Mohsen, the Prophet's youngest grandson and the first martyr of the Ahlul Bayt. What was the reason for commitment of such a cardinal sin by these persons who had been witness to the practice of the Prophet to salute at Fatima's doorstep and to stand up and make her sit in his place whenever she entered his presence? Didn't they know she was the Siddiqatul Kubra, or the most truthful lady? Hadn't they heard the Prophet's famous saying, "Fatima is a part of me, and whoever displeases her has displeased me. And indeed God is displeased at those who displease me." Was it not the wealth of her mother, the Immaculate Ummul Mu'minin, mother of all true believers, Khadijatul Kubra, peace upon her, that had fed them, clothed them, and sheltered them during the days of persecution of the new Muslims by the pagan Arabs in Mecca? Weren't they aware that if not for the valor and swordsmanship of her husband, Imam Ali, peace upon him, they would have been slain long ago by the Arab and Israelite hordes during the battles imposed upon Muslims at Badr, Uhud, Khandaq, Khaybar, Hunayn, etc.? How come they had chosen to incur divine wrath when facts and realities about Fatima and her household were as crystal clear as the shining sun? The answers to these questions are obvious. They coveted political leadership despite the fact that neither God nor the Prophet had willed for them. They thought that power will forever belong to them if the Prophet's divinely designated vicegerent is forced to acknowledge their usurpation of the caliphate under threats, a rope around his neck, a sword menacingly unsheathed at him, and his wife writhing in pain and agony. Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, whoever rose to the defense of the right of her husband, and in a sermon that remains eloquently impressive after the passing of a millennium and four centuries, she not just immortalized the fundamentals of Islam, which they were reaching, but the rights of women, especially their inheritance. and revelation of Ayah 26 of Surah Isra, which says, "Give the nearest of kin their due right, and the needy and the traveler." The Prophet had called his dear daughter and said, "Fadak is one of the territories for which we did not exhaust our horses and camels to acquire it. It is mine exclusively. Now I gift it to you and your offspring according to God's instructions." Actually, the Prophet was referring to the large orchard which was gifted to him by the people of Khaybar, and regarding which God says in the Noble Quran in Ayah 6 and 7 of Surah Hashr, "That which Allah gave to his Prophet from them, you did not spare any horse for its sake, neither any riding camel. But Allah makes his prophets prevail over whomever he wishes, and Allah has power over all rights. That which Allah gave to his prophets from the people of the towns are for the Allah and the Prophet. The near of the kin and the orphans, the needy and the traveler, so that they do not circulate among the rich among you. Take whatever the Prophet gives you, and relinquish whatever he forbids you, and be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is severe in retribution." The most truthful lady warned the Caliph and his companions of the divine punishment for their unjustified actions, including their seizure of Fadak, whose income she used to spend on the poor and needy. She told them, "Now hang firmly to this cheap dromedary of caliphate of yours, and release it not. But beware, the hump of this camel is injured while there are blisters and holes in his feet. It carries the scars of ignominy and the sign of the wrath of Allah. Eternal shame is attached to it." Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the mother of the youth of paradise, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, peace upon them, thus stands out as the fulcrum of faith that links prophethood to imamat, and around which revolves genuine Islam, which will reach its climax with the reappearance of her last infallible offspring, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, who, as promised by God Almighty, will establish the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice in the end times.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The Shaheed.
Part 6.
Within 2 months of the martyrdom of Haj Qasim, I was invited to an anti-US conference in Caracas, Venezuela. When I opened the posters and banners of Haj Qasim, I was flabbergasted by the response of the people there. Almost everybody had at least heard his name. Soon, all the sessions of the conference were adorned with the pictures of the Shaheed. On the last day of our visit, a solidarity gathering was held for the people of Iran to condole the martyrdom of Qasim Soleimani in one of the main squares of Caracas. At the end of the ceremony, a native Venezuelan woman started performing a sad song, and I only understood one word from her song: Soleimani. I'm Sarbazullah Rizvi, and in this episode of The Shaheed, we will examine the resonance of efforts made by Shaheed Soleimani miles apart in Latin America. Stay tuned. Venezuelan Palestinian writer and analyst, Susana Khalil. Susana Khalil, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Recently, President Maduro had an interview with Al Mayadeen where he said about the assassination of General Qasim Soleimani. He said, is this really a world we want, where the White House issues an order to kill a hero of the struggle against terrorism in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon? So some may ask, Susana Khalil, some may ask that how the martyrdom of Shaheed Soleimani, a man who was involved in the issues of West Asia, is being, you know, echoed or, you know, reflected in South America, in Latin American region, which is thousands of miles away.
Yes, but before to answer that, I would like to say that the USA assassination of the General Qasem Soleimani and the Commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandi was because these two men together succeed or advance in combating the nefarious terrorism. To give you one example, in Syria. And the assassination of Soleimani is a victory for pseudo or fake Islamic terrorists coordinated by the West and Gulf tyrannies such as Saudi Arabia and the other Arab regimes and the Turkish government. I would like to mention that the Western world find it hard to believe that the fascist, the fake Islamic group are largely the creation of the West, where the first victim are Muslim, and the first who fight them are Muslim themselves. And I will be brief today, the big fighter in the world of Islamic fascism, the false Islam, are Iran, Hezbollah, Russia and Syria. No doubt about that. General Soleimani, he believes in local popular groups to fight terrorism. I mean the people, the same people who yes. are in coordination to how to fight the terrorism. And I would now also to talk concerning Latin America, the effect of the consequences in Latin America. It definitely, we as a Latin American, we feel that it's not something bizarre. It's not something far from Latin America. We know that this is a crime made even we see it as a logic, but which logic? Of imperialism logic, is a fascist logic. Is in Latin America, the people see this assassination like a crime, but which is normal in this imperialistic reality. We are in the 21st century, and we are still talking about imperialism, colonialism, and this is the real fascism, the main fascism of our time. So Latin America, concerning this, the martyr, Soleimani martyr, this is for in Latin America is the same like in the Arab world, on the Persian world, They say he was a victim of freedom. He was victim of terrorism. He is victim because he is fighting for sovereignty. He is fighting for freedom. He is fighting for this fascist order, international order, which is the case.
Now let me ask one question. You talked about Latin America and how the martyrdom of Sheikh Soleimani is connected to the people in Latin America, and also I know that you have a Palestinian background as well, and Palestine is a victim of neoliberalism. Actually, the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause is actually as a result of the neoliberalism. So, how do you find the contribution of General Qasem Soleimani to particularly the Palestinian cause?
Okay, in Latin America, the assassination and even the trajectory of Soleimani is an inspiration. This is a human being that is a human of respect, loyalty, and he is a martyr of this fascist international system. And I'm talking about Latin America. And as a Palestinian, and we have a huge respect for this determination, this brave determination of this man who is fighting against the imperialism. I insist with the term imperialism because many people want to talk about freedom, justice, human rights, democracy, but they avoid the reality of imperialism. This is a big hypocrisy when we talk about even women's rights and we don't talk about the reality of imperialism. The biggest violation of human rights is come from the reality of this retrograde reality of imperialism. And the position of the Iran concerning Palestine, because how come we are in the 21st century and that we are still supporting colonialism? Israel is a classic colonialism. This regime is a colonial regime, as a classic colonialism, and we cannot accept it in our time, in our history, in our mind, in our spirit, in our freedom, in our awareness of justice. Mm-hmm. As a Palestinian, we have to continue and to support this kind of position, brave position, honest position against imperialism, against the colonialism. This is anachronism today in the 21st century. At the same time, Iran is paying a huge price for have this moral, ethical, and honest position for justice. Because yes. The Palestinian people are fighting. There's a native people who are fighting a colonizer, Europe colonization.
Exactly.
And Iran is the, I can't say Iran and Syria is the main supporter now for Palestinian cause, for Palestinian liberation, liberation from colonialism, which is a retrograde reality in our time.
Yes.
How come we are in the 21st century and that we are still talking about colonialism? Yes. No way. We have it's impossible to erase and to hide the colonial reality which is the state of Israel.
Okay, I will continue my talk with Susanna Khalil after the reflection of this criminal assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis by Americans in the Latin American context.
The General Soleimani assassination in Latin America and the Spanish language press had a flavor of its own, as was the case with any other region of the world. Also, the spices grew sharper or milder from one Latino country to another. But what you may find funny, angering, and bewildering all at once is the tone the American press and Zionist lobby took towards Soleimani's martyrdom in relation to Latin America. They wasted no time in drawing on old cases to turn the media tide against Iran. The Wall Street Journal actually said that Latin America should be thanking Trump for assassinating Soleimani. The article focuses more than anything on the AMIA bombing in Argentina and the death of the AMIA case prosecutor that followed, the prosecutor being Alberto Nisman. The article paints such a dark picture of the suicide van bomb attack on the Argentine-Israelite Mutual Association, or AMIA, building in Buenos Aires, Argentina in 1994, that it diminishes the gravity of the Soleimani assassination. It even justifies it. Even what good relations Iran and Latin American countries share, the article undermines as solely security and military-based. It paints the governments of Cuba, Venezuela, and Bolivia as oppressive governments that would, of course, receive backing from the likes of Iran. But actually, no one could have dealt the region a greater socio-political blow than the U.S. with its numerous sanctions and coup d'etats imposed on Latin American countries. One of the most important articles on the matter was by the Protect United States Democracies Foundation. The article was published for the anniversary of the assassination and dedicated a good portion to cultural centers' activities in Brazil, one center being the Al-Mustafa University, which had recently been put on America's blacklist of the sanctions. And so, just its name coming up implied shady activity and sabotage. Now, Argentine's Infobae news agency is connected to the Zionist lobby and is big on following up on the AMIA case. And so it published all dark matter coming from American and Zionist lobby press within a framework of its own to create a new wave of support for the U.S. act of state terrorism. It even criticized Venezuela and Cuba for their expression of sympathy right after the general was murdered. Words matter, and a supposedly moderate Spanish tone on both sides of the pond adopted words like matar to water down the assassination by calling it a kill. BBC Spanish was one to do so. Now, politicians in power, the press, and people don't always have the same attitudes to a kill or assassination. But only one Latin American leader expressed satisfaction at the assassination of General Soleimani. That was Jair Bolsonaro, the Brazilian president who came to power thanks to a coalition of far-right Brazilian parties. Of course, former President Lula da Silva quickly condemned Bolsonaro as a lackey of Trump. The most positive Latin response came from Venezuela. Each of its dignitaries reacted to the American act of assassination right in the early days following the act. Nicolas Maduro, the then president's government, condemned the assassination as news of it broke out. His foreign minister Jorge Arreaza and other dignitaries visited the Iranian embassy to sign the martyred General Soleimani memorial. One of them, the then National Constituent Assembly chief, at a ceremony with representatives from different countries, called for a standing ovation for the martyred Iranian general. Come the anniversary of the assassination, in the capital Caracas and Venezuela at large, different ceremonies were held for a week with the people participating. And Nicolas Maduro recalled the many assassinations by America. Some other countries sympathizing with Iran and condemning America were Ecuador, whose then President Correa declared that America had committed an act of terror by murdering General Soleimani. Bolivia's then President Evo Morales tweeted that the fight against imperialism had its heroes and martyrs, such as Commander Qasem Soleimani, and that people recognized their fight for justice. The Nicaraguan government and Cuban Foreign Minister Rodriguez also condemned the assassination of Soleimani. Nicaragua invited the world to peace at the same time. In Peru, Muslim and Christian activists gathered in the capital Lima. Demonstrators chanted, "No to imperialist wars, Yankee, go home." As for a most important cultural measure taken in Latin America, that will be the publishing of the book My Uncle Soleimani by El Faro International Publishing House. It was printed in Colombia, Venezuela, and Ecuador for teenagers everywhere in Latin America. Written in simple language, it turned out popular and came to a third printing in some areas.
I'm hosting Susana Khalil, a Palestinian Venezuelan writer and analyst. Susana Khalil, one of the main issues currently we are facing in the West Asian region is the issue of normalization of the ties of some Arab and Muslim countries with Zionist regime. Some of the regimes of the region are normalizing their ties with the Zionist regime. What's your stand on that, and how do you analyze that?
The normalization of the Arab tyranny is not the normalization. This is a betray to the Palestinian cause, and also this is a risk that they are taking even for them in the future for their own sovereignty. Because this colonialism is not limited to only to Palestine. The Zionist movement, they say, is not only Palestine to belongs to them. They say that even all the Arab world belongs to them. So this is because we are this is a betray, but the betray against the Palestinian cause. And this is a normalization with colonialism, with fascism, normalization with imperialism, normalization with the right wing. This is a normalization with the violence of against the human rights. This is the normalization with the crime. This is normalization with an unfair injustice, and this is normalization against humanity. And this is a betray, not only with the Palestinian cause. It's a betray to Persian, to Iranian, to all the whole humanity, to all hope. Even this is a normalization with fascism, and I think even it's going to be a risk. I insist with that for themselves, for the sovereignty of their own country, because then. Because I said this colonialization, colonialism is expansionist. They say that it's not only exactly. Palestine who belong to them, it's
but the whole region,
the Middle East also is. So this is a risk. To make a normalization with them is like you're gonna be the next to be part of this colonial expansionist
exactly.
Regime. And this is a very sad situation, which is not new, but we are in the historic moment that we have several allies. For example, we can see the support from Syria, from Persia, from Iran, even the situation of a multipolar international order like China, Russia, even Latin America, the left-wing progressist movement that they have awareness about people, culture, and justice and freedom. So I think they're gonna collapse. But
yeah.
Definitely, we don't have to mix people with their policy of their government
exactly.
Or the
of course.
Tyranny.
Exactly.
No, I know that, for example, the case of Morocco, the people of Morocco, they are clear that they support the Palestinian cause,
yeah.
Palestinian liberation,
yeah.
And that we doesn't mean it's they support their own tyrant, the king
yeah.
of Morocco, which is allied to the Zionism, to Zionists and the imperialists. That's why he is there in this power, and we have to continue to struggle, and we can see, for example, the example of. General Soleimani and the commander Abu Mahdi, all together with determination, with the brave character, spirit, mind. This is a school that we have to take it, and this is a great example of dignity that we have. And Soleimani is a symbol, is an inspiration, is a determination, is a clear example of a struggle against imperialism, against the colonialism. I say in colonialism, a classic colonialism that Palestinian native are facing in our time. We are talking about 21st century.
Exactly.
And this is anachronism that
exactly.
we are
Thank
fighting.
You.
And this fight doesn't belong only to Palestinians, belong to the whole world. And we say that the Palestinians have to be liberated. All Palestine.
Let's hope for that.
With history, and we have a depth with humanity. The liberation of Palestine is the liberation of the world. That's why when those tyranny and the Emirati, for example, they talk about normalization with the colonial regime of Israel, this is a normalization with fascism, this is normalization with colonialism, this is a normalization
exactly.
with the imperialism, this is a normalization against humanity.
Thank you, Susanna, for being with us, and thank you for accepting our invitation. Thank you.
Thanks to you.
Yes, this was my interview with Susanna Khalil, the Venezuelan Palestinian writer and analyst. Let's shift to the next part of our program, The Shaheed, which is about the devotion of General Qasem Soleimani to Imam Khomeini as the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran and his successor, Imam Khomeini. Stay with us.
By the Soleimani school of thought, we mean a branch of the Imam's thinking. Because General Soleimani's outlook was based on that of the founder of the Islamic Revolution. That is why the present leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, in January 2020, said in his condolence message on the martyrdom of Qasem Soleimani, "He is a prominent example of the students of Islam and the Imam Khomeini school." He himself writes in his will, as someone influenced by the late Imam since adolescence, "The art of Dia Khomeini was that he first brought Islam to back up Iran and then set Iran on a path of serving Islam. Had it not been for Islam and the Islamic spirit of this nation, Saddam would have ripped this country apart like a wild wolf. America would have done the same like a rabid dog. But the Imam artfully brought Islam to the nation's rescue, together with Ashura and Muharram, Safar and Fatimiyya mourning days. He created revolutions within a revolution. That is why in every period, thousands have been willing to sacrifice their lives to shield you and the nation and Iran and Islam, and have brought the greatest materialist powers to their knees. Qasem Soleimani, under the influence of Imam Khomeini, fell in the path of revolutionary protest in teenagehood. And after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he joined the IRGC force, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. To his last breath, he put in every effort to help the ideas of the two successive leaders of the revolution materialize. He saw Ayatollah Khamenei as the most similar case to Imam Khomeini, finding no one with such resemblance within clerics anywhere in the world of Islam. He even recommended him in his will. "This scholar, Dia Khamenei, knowledgeable and humble in religion, fiqh or Islamic jurisprudence, and mysticism, hold close to your hearts." He feared if the enemy destroys the Islamic revolution, nothing will be left of Islam, and society will be dragged to full atheism. And so he wrote to religious scholars, "Your soldier has seen from the watchtower that if the system sees harm, the religion and values you have striven for in religious schools will disappear. This era is different from any other era. This time, if they get a hold of affairs, nothing will be left of Islam. The right way is to defend the revolution, the Islamic Republic, and the leader with no considerations."
slogan and the demand of the people from Afghanistan to Iraq and from Iraq to Latin America has been the same. And very simple. Yankee, go home. Thank you for being with this episode of The Shaheed. Stay tuned. Wassalam.
The Limelight.
Former President Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka visited at least twice on 6th of January 2021 in an effort to stop the attack on the U.S. Capitol, according to Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalist David Edwards and has been taken from the alternet.org website. The piece is titled, Liz Cheney Reveals Ivanka Visited Donald Trump at Least Twice on 6th of January to Stop the Violence. Former President